Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we have an interesting couple of hours, as we usually do.
It's always interesting, especially Mondays when we're together.
That's true. The Mad Duo is here. And Ed McCarthy, of course, you can hear every Friday in this time slot from 5 to 7 p.m. Joins us here every Monday to co-host. We are going to have the first hour, we're going to talk with Pat Chesimy. In the second hour, we're going to talk about... Do we have two Americas?
This is a dynamic panel you've pulled together for the second hour, Mark.
We'll have right, left, in the middle.
Every side of the story is going to be told.
Thinking about Glenn Beck and his rally on Saturday, and did he have 98,000 people or 500,000 people? We'll talk about that. But more importantly, we'll talk about what the substance of this divide is in America. But first, we have to talk about the future of the city of Baltimore and crime with our... State's Attorney Pat Chesimy, and welcome. Good to see you.
Well, thank you. Nobody warned me that you were known as the Mad Duo.
I just made that up.
I feel a little intimidated here. Though.
I can't imagine that we intimidate you.
I don't think
Chesimy.
So. But 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in this conversation. Some folks are calling in now. We'll get to those calls in a minute. We're talking with Pat Chesimy, who is in a race. With Greg Bernstein. I'm really tired. It's been a long day. I only got 3 hours sleep. I apologize. Greg Bernstein, who was on the show last week. Anthony?
Yes. Well, it's a very interesting race. It's getting attention from all over the state of Maryland. When people talk about your race, Ms. Jessamy, they say, well, this is one of those races that people from across the state are watching to see what happens. Let me just ask you, start with the question. For almost the last 8 years, Mayor O'Malley, then now Governor O'Malley, Mayor Sheila Dixon, now Mayor Stephanie Rawlins-Blake, have all been touting this major decrease in crime. And it has been their campaign platforms. It has been on all of their literature. Now that you're in this race for re-election, it seems like there are a lot of folks who are pointing the finger at the state's attorney's office and saying, look, we're having this increase in crime and that you're the blame for this, or your office. What do you think about that?
I even told the governor that I'm the only constant that we have had since 1995. And even though the population for the city of Baltimore has declined by 9%, violent crime has decreased by 59%. And as you know, we're in tough economic times, and we do have these spikes in crime that occur. And we're going through one of those unfortunate phases now.
Because I don't think anyone wants to take away from the horrible incidents most recently. We've had them for a while, but Stephen Pitcairn and Milton Hill and others who were the victims of real horrible violence. At the rally that took place in Charles Village, when your name was mentioned, a lot of folks in the crowd were yelling out, we want to hear from Pat Chesimy. We want to talk to Pat Chesimy about crime. Why do you think it's resting on your shoulders right now? There was, and let me preface my questions by saying the accused in the Stephen Pitcairn murder has a very lengthy, violent history. And a lot of people said your office kind of dropped the ball in prosecuting him on at least two incidents where he was accused of violent crimes and there wasn't enough evidence to prosecute.
Being accused of having dropped the ball is really not accurate. And usually what happens is when we give the facts to the public, they view it as a finger-pointing tactic. That's not what it is. We just lay the facts out and the public can take it as is. But I am probably the most visible person within the criminal justice system in the community. I'm everywhere. I am an integral part of the community. And I guess being visible, a young lady told me I was in Pigtown on Friday night. She said, well, Mrs. Jessamy, you're here, so I blame you. I said, well, I don't accept blame. I'm not responsible for crime. I'm responsible for prosecuting crime. I don't manufacture evidence. I don't make it up. When we have it, we present it to a judge or a jury. And if, we have high commitment rates. So my opponent says we have the lowest conviction rate in the state. That is totally untrue. We account for 31% of all the criminal charges in the state, but we account for 60% of all the commitments to the prisons in the state, which means that you're two times more likely to go to prison for having committed a serious crime in Baltimore City than you are any place else in the state. That's the highest conviction rate, and that's a fact.
We're talking with State's Attorney Pat Jessamy, running for re-election here in the city of Baltimore, 410-319-8888. We will get to your calls in just a minute. Hank, you're the first caller up, 410-319-8888, to join in this conversation, your questions and thoughts for Pat Jessamy. And last week we had on her challenger, and this week we have on the woman who still holds the office. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Talking about commitment, I mean, how do we define commitment? I mean, we have a very large population of people in this city who are facing charges, who are in jail on high bails for minor offenses.
Not really.
No. I've seen the stats.
Only because they have failure to appear in their records.
No. That's not true.
Yeah,
it
is.
I can pull the stats up.
Well, I'm telling you, when they are in jail on high bails for minor offenses, it's because
relative. If you have no money and your bail is $5,000, you can't make it.
Well, what I'm telling you is that if they have been set a bail, most people are released on their own recognizance for minor crimes. And when a judge sets a high bail for someone, it's usually because they have failed to appear other times for courts. Now, Doug Colbert, who he and I have had many conversations about this, and he's worked very hard on this issue. I'm trying to keep violent people in jail. I'm not trying to keep nonviolent people in jail. But when people don't show up for court or they fail to appear when they are supposed to be in court, judges are not inclined to release them on their own recognizance.
I hear that, but when I would challenge you on those numbers.
I've seen the numbers, so you can challenge me, but I'm going to be right.
We've done a lot of shows on this issue.
Yeah,
and there are a lot of people in city jail, most of whom, when they get to trial, are not convicted, or have their charges dropped, are languishing in jail for 2 or 3 months, waiting for trial, then are not convicted, lose their jobs, some lose their homes.
Well, we try to prevent that from happening.
But the reality is you don't. Nobody does.
Well, I don't make recommendations. And see, that's another point. Doug and I have had this disagreement because they want us to, because we do good work. He wants me, as the state's attorney, to agree to recommend bail in nonviolent offenses. We only recommend bail in violent offenses. So I'm not inclined to take on additional responsibility, because he knows if we make bail recommendations, then the judges may accept it more, and that some of these people who would be in jail longer would probably be released. But that has been our conversation.
Well, before I turn this over to Anthony, we go back to the phones here. One last question on that, and I don't quite understand why, and I'm not plan to play Doug Colbert here. Doug Colbert can play himself.
I know. But we don't make recommendations.
But why not? My question is, if your job is to prosecute the bad men and women of this town who commit the crimes that put fear into the heart, we'll get to that part later. Why doesn't the state's attorney's office step up and go, well, here's somebody who's been arrested for public urination or whatever that is, and we recommend no bail and counseling do that.
Yeah, what we are doing now, though, because most people who are arrested for public urination, we decline to prosecute unless they are nuisance to the community, which means that the first time they get arrested for a crime like that, we're at central booking and we review the charges. We decline to prosecute. Now, as you know, when they were doing the zero tolerance issue, our declinations had gone up to probably about 34%. We call that abated by arrest. There are a number of other individuals. Right now, I think it's averaging out 19 or 20% of all the arrests, we call those on-view arrests that go through central booking, we decline to prosecute. Those individuals are immediately released. The other cases that are still scheduled to go to trial, if the individuals are still in jail for minor offenses after 6 days, then we do what we call quality case review, and we bring those cases into early resolution court that is operating over at Central Booking, because we're trying to work with the Department of Corrections to reduce bed days. So we're doing that. Now, if people remain in jail after we've declined to prosecute, they shouldn't be there. And then with quality case review, they're usually individuals who are charged with minor offenses who have prior failure to appear in their backgrounds, or they're charged with serious crimes.
I'll come back. But let me let Anthony have a shot.
Let me just
say,
we have a lot of folks on the phone who want to ask questions. But let me ask you, you mentioned that you're in the community, one of the most visible state's attorneys, really the most one of the most visible law enforcement officials that we have in the city of Baltimore. Greg Bernstein was on the program with me last week, and he criticized you. He leveled some criticism. You know, his theme is fight crime first.
Yeah.
He said that he believes that you've kind of lost focus on prosecuting, fighting crime, and that you've kind of gotten lost in this intervention, being in the community, some of the youth programs that you've started. He said that the state's attorney's job, as he sees it, is really to keep people safe and to prosecute, and that you've kind of gone off in another direction.
Well,
what about that criticism?
Well, that, you know, it shows that he really doesn't know what he's talking about, because there's nobody, with our commitment numbers, there's nobody who's doing more to get violent repeat offenders off the streets, keeping them off the streets for as long as possible as me. I was the one who set up the firearms program that is responsible for having taken over 1,800 individuals who have been in illegal possession of guns or used guns in an illegal manner. I have set up a partnership with the U.S. Attorney's Office that I have three prosecutors over there prosecuting gun crime, violent drug, and gang organizations. I also have designed, you know, trying to close the revolving door. We don't have to do violations of probation because they are court civil proceedings. But our office does them anyway because we're committed to trying to get violent repeat offenders off the streets. So we do violation of probation. And I have a collateral unit that is funded to do just that. I also have a group of attorneys over in the war room who make recommendation on bail for violent repeat offenders so that they're not out on the streets committing new crimes while they're awaiting their trial. So we're doing things to close the revolving door. We're addressing the whole issue of gun violence. And I was the person in the country who led that change from drug prosecution and interdiction to going after violent criminals. And I did it through going across the country training prosecutors on with the National District Attorneys Association and the American Prosecutors Research Institute, training law enforcement and prosecutors how to prosecute gun crime. So I've been at the forefront. I have a gun timeline that goes from 1995. I've been at the legislature almost every year trying to get new gun laws. I testified on behalf of the Gun Safety Responsibility Act, which gives 5 years to a felon in possession of a handgun. So, you know, for him to say something like that shows that he really doesn't know what is going on in the circuit courts. We wouldn't have all these 60% of the commitments to the Department of Correction if it wasn't an emphasis on violent crime. But we know that crime is relative, and we have to also give priority to, not as much priority, but we can't let the minor quality of life offenses go. So we have prevention programs, we have intervention programs, we have mediation, we have drug court, we have mental health court we participate in. We even have a prostitution diversion program. We have a program where we refer young men between the ages of 18 and 24 for educational support, help to become better parents, job training. We're trying to help people become more accountable and responsible, and a prosecutor should do all of those things.
Let me go to the phone, Shane. We'll come back with our own questions at 410-319-8888. Hank, you're on the air.
How you doing? Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey.
Afternoon.
I'm blessed. How you gentlemen doing today?
Doing well.
How you doing, Miss Jessie?
I'm good. How are you?
I am blessed. And I know that you do a lot for the children. I know that you're really in the community, right? I'd like to ask you two questions, right? One, do you think that everybody's coming at you now because that most of the government high official spots are being taken over by women, black minority women, or minority women are running for a lot of these positions? Two, do you think that Mr. Bernstein is, and I don't want to say this in the wrong way, right, Mr. Brown's lackey to attack you, or his better pick for you so he can get more of his cases seen in his way? Really counting for him. And two, the third one, would you at least fight two cases a year as state's attorney?
You know, when it, not being in court every day, the victims, the witnesses, and the public, they don't get the best in you if you're there infrequently. I know the law. I have practiced law. So being in court, showboating with the case, what is that supposed to prove? I keep up on all the case law. I keep up on the rules of evidence. I advise my attorneys every single day relative to things that are going on in the courtroom. So, no, I'm not going to get in the court just to make a point because I think it's too serious a business for that. In reference to Mr. Brown and Mr. Bernstein are both criminal defense attorneys. Now, that's what they do, and that's what they've done for many, many years. Now, I know that I don't know why the criminal defense bar wants to control the state's attorney's office, but they're criminal defense attorneys. So that's all I can say in reference to that subject.
Hank, thanks for that call. Let's go back to the phones, and Voodoo Lady, you're on the air.
Yes, Nagadeth to everybody there. That's how are you? And am I on the line?
You're on the line.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay, Nagadeth to everybody. And, Mark, this is the first time I've responded to your Facebook notice because I'm interested in supporting you, Ms. Jessamy, or Dada, which is Sister Jessamy.
Thank you very much.
Your office handled a very sensitive case wherein I was threatened by one of the street pharmacists. Because I was dead on his case against it. And when he came right to my steps and threatened me, I said, oh, you're threatening me now, huh? So I'm going right in the house and call the police. I did so. He was arrested on drug counts and wanted to go into juvenile facility. And eventually we worked it out such that I guess that's where he went. Because eventually, and your staff didn't enable me to have to come down to the office and face him or something in the trial. They were very sensitive about that. And as far as I know, he didn't return to the neighborhood, and I hope he's well on his way to redemption.
Okay, do you have a question, though?
Well, I want to say that I believe that the white males, and it seems to me it might be O'Malley, who cursed you out, Mrs. Jessamy, and Bernstein and Bielfeld. I just really think that it's some white male supremacy because they think they ought to be in charge and that we of African origin are not capable of governing ourselves.
Let's make that into a question. I mean, and I wonder, you've heard this argument in this city during this campaign, and I asked Mr. Bernstein a similar question from his perspective. I mean, do you think that what our caller and the last caller have said are true? Do you think that there is a that it is kind of a white political establishment is trying to unseat you from office? Do you think that's true?
Well, I don't know. I know that there's the criminal defense bar is attempting to unseat me. And I think the public needs to ask the question, why? Is the criminal defense bar trying to get rid of a prosecutor who is sending 60% of the commitments to the Department of Corrections, and they're out there saying we have the lowest conviction rate in the state? Now, something's wrong with that picture. I am hopeful that this has nothing to do with race. I remain hopeful in that regard, and we'll see where the votes come out. My opponent has offered no solutions. He has offered criticism of everything, but no solutions. He says we're not prioritizing violent criminals. We are. He says we have the lowest conviction rate in the state and we have the highest. So he's saying that where we disagree is that I believe in prevention, treatment, and early intervention. He doesn't think a prosecutor's office should be doing any of that. And that's exactly what I believe in. I believe that you give priority to the violent criminals, but you also do those other things because you have to have a very comprehensive strategy when dealing with crime. I'm in the community because you need to know what the community is encountering. Crime is relative. We address the graffiti issues in Oakenshaw. We address the petty theft issues in East Baltimore. We address the violent crime in West Baltimore. We're dealing with the community, and we give them a voice. We do community impact statements. We have even done court watch programs with community members who are interested in seeing what is happening. We've helped the community to draft legislation to address some of their issues. Nuisance abatement was one of those. We drafted it in the state's attorney's office. And because of community input, we've been going back amending it and changing it two or three different times to make it applicable to commercial and to owner-occupied premises.
We have a bunch of callers, and we're getting ready to take a break in just a few moments. Let me ask you this question. There is a lot bouncing around, Mrs. Jessamy, on the Internet about the same question that I think Hank asked you about your time in court. Mm-hmm. And I think in many ways, when we watch these criminal drama, these crime dramas on television, you always see that district attorney or that state's attorney in court.
No, no. If you watch crime scene, not crime scene, Law and Order, he's never in court. He's advising the lawyers who go into court.
Very good point.
And I can tell you that I have division chiefs, and they're most of what we have going on in court, they're videos. And the reason I don't go to court to observe because I become the distraction. And people give more significance to a case if I'm observing it than it needs to have. So
are there any cases, though, that need that kind of attention?
We have.
That the state's attorney would be in the courtroom watching or prosecuting?
Well, you become the distraction, and you don't want to be the distraction because you want the attorney to be able to focus their entire attention. You want everybody in that courtroom focused on what those attorneys are presenting, not distracted by who's sitting in the back.
So do you think there's – so you think when people make this accusation, and it's been part of this campaign –
sure. Yes. –
That you have not prosecuted a case since you've been state's attorney.
That's correct.
And that you don't feel that A is important, and you just to explain why. And B, but that some people have said that you have never prosecuted a case.
Or
Is that true or not?
Oh, no. I've tried lots of cases, and there are many people that you could ask about it. I used to be a public defender, but since I've been a prosecutor, I tried a two-week trial once. I don't know if you remember Jack Call stole over $685,000 from a city teacher's pension.
I did a
two-week trial in that case before Judge Ari Davis, and I was a lone attorney, had over 285 exhibits, and I introduced them. Johnny Unitas was one of my witnesses because this man, who was a great guy, and I have a wonderful Jack Call story. I saw him since he got out of jail. He got 12 years, suspended all but 7. I was at a wake, and he came up to me, and he gave me a big hug. And he said, I saved his life. And he called his wife over, and he said, you always said you wanted to meet Mrs. Jessamy. She comes over. She gives me a big hug, and she says, thank you very much. The years Jack were incarcerated were the best years of my life. And they both walked me to the car. But that's just one of my defendants. I tried a lot of cases. I even defended a lady before the burning bed issue became important. I was a defense attorney in Mississippi and got a woman acquitted who had unfortunately murdered her husband after enduring years of abuse. The judge allowed me in 1975 in Mississippi to introduce evidence of past battering. I've practiced law in 4 states. I've tried many cases.
On the way to break, let me ask this other question. What you said earlier in the program, then we'll take a break and come back to our caller, Sandy, the first caller up, Sandy, Philip, Aaron. In that order, we'll take your call. So if you're impatient to leave, I can't help you. But if you wait a minute, we'll get to your calls. Sandy, Philip, Aaron, you're going to come next as Anthony McCarthy and I talk with Pat Chesney, who's seeking to remain state's attorney for the city of Baltimore. The sump in your in another debate you had in another place station over there somewhere.
one that you might have had some past relationship.
I might have had some major past relationship.
We won't call the name.
We won't call the name today, unless you get mad at me and want to call the name. Okay too. But the Sun Papers challenged you on something that you said and it's the same thing that you said here this evening with us. They said that the federal prosecutors said you didn't initiate the program you talked about when it came to these gun issues that actually began before you were state's attorney in 1994.
Yes,
it was Project Disarm, and that you are taking credit for a program while you might have helped push it and grow it.
Yes.
You've taken credit for a program and you say you initiated when you didn't initiate it.
No, I said that Stuart Sims, I've always given Stuart Sims credit for starting the program in 1994. I was deputy state's attorney.
You worked.
And he left before the program got up and running. And I took that program and it became Exile. Okay? It became Exile in Richmond, Virginia. And then I set up a unit in my office, that firearms unit, and it was Exile in Richmond, Virginia, and the firearms unit that ended up going around the country training prosecutors on how to prosecute gun crime. This was in the late 90s, 1998, 1999. And, I take credit for that. Justly so. I think my opponent at a debate a few weeks ago said that Exile began in 2006. So it did not.
We're talking with Pat Chesney, of course, our state's attorney. She's seeking re-election. We have a lot of questions for her. So do you. Anthony McCarthy, of course, co-hosting. It's Monday. And I look forward to my Mondays with Anthony here
in the
studio. We get back from this break. Sandy, Philip, Aaron, I think I said that was the order we're going to go in. You come back. I want to remind you, attention to area jazz vocalists and musicians. You're invited to a historic photo shoot, A Great Day in Baltimore, Monday, September 13th, 9 a.m. at the War Memorial Plaza in downtown Baltimore. The photo shoot will bring together local and regional musicians in Baltimore's rich musical history, past and present, in support of jazz in the city. Proceeds from the photographs will benefit the UB Blake Cultural Center's jazz workshop programs. For more information, contact Mia Miata at 443-204-1730. That's 443-204-1730. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. Go right to the phones. Did we promise that, Anthony?
That's right.
410-319-8888. And Sandy in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Sandy. Welcome.
Hi, Miss Jessamy.
Hello, Sandy.
I support and thank you for the prevention programs. I appreciate the fact that you are sensitive to the inequity in our community for our young people in particular. And I would just like to say I had to chuckle at the last part about Jack and the 7 years. I may need you to prosecute me. This is Sandy.
This is taking a dangerous turn, this conversation. I don't know if I like it or not. So let's go back. That was a comedic interlude, I suppose.
Yeah.
410-319-8888. Philip in Ashburton, you're on the air.
Thank you for having me on. I mean, I have a couple. I'm not going to ask too many questions, but I definitely would like to ask you, Ms. Jessamy, if you think that there's anything that you could have done better in the time that you've been in office. I mean, because right now it doesn't sound like you really feel much pressure because, I don't know, it sounds like a social hour at The View instead of a candidate really laying down a platform, and I just don't really understand at this point.
Well, I would say this before Ms. Jessamy answers your question. We've asked some very to the point, demanding questions of this candidate, like we have every candidate that comes in. I don't think we're having a social hour. Certainly not interested in socializing with Ms. Jessamy. We're looking, Mark and I, for answers to questions that we believe that the people who listen to this program want to know, including the conviction rate, about prosecution, being in the courtroom, about community programs. If you're not getting the answers you want, you should ask a question instead of making a statement. Ms. Jessamy, do you think that you've done anything that you could have done better in the last few years that you've been prosecutor?
Well, there are always things that you could do better. We've worked very hard to address a number of issues and a lot of challenges. And mostly what we've been impeded by has been resources. We currently are operating at very low numbers. We have 36 current vacancies. We're under a furlough plan, and that means 14 additional staff are out on any given day because they're on furlough. So resources are a real serious and challenging problem for us. We've also been challenged by this whole issue of witness intimidation, and I have worked very hard on this issue throughout my time as state's attorney. I've been to the legislature. I've imposed training programs. I have worked, you know, to do public, I guess, to get the public to understand that we cannot proceed and introduce evidence in court that allows for a conviction if we don't have it and if people don't come forward. So we need them in order to do what they want us to do.
Ms. Jessamy, let me ask you about the relationship between the state's attorney's office and the police department. And oftentimes there's been a lot made in this campaign of your relationship with Commissioner Biefeld and former commissioners. There's often talk about evidence and prosecution. Do you think that the relationship you have and the state's attorney's office has with this police commissioner is problematic? And if it is problematic, What is the problem with the relationship, and is there anything we can do to better train police to bring better evidence so that your prosecutors can go into court and prosecute these cases? Or is there something personal between you and this police commissioner?
Well, there were about three questions included.
We want to make sure we ask hard questions since Philip doesn't think we're asking hard questions.
You know, and I've responded to this a number of times because I thought up until the change in the administration that I had a very good relationship with this commissioner. Now, he and I did not see eye to eye on some issues, but we were communicating and we knew that we could call each other and that we would get the truth. And it changed. So I don't know what led to that change, and I can't speak to that. But I do know that over the course of time, when there have been issues, we have worked with the police. And when there were issues with the homicide cases, we made recommendations. The police department implemented them. We have a liaison now that meets with detectives and their supervisors and prosecutors and their supervisors numerous times before we get to trial. And the lab person, because we have a laboratory, we have a person committed to working with the lab to make it the best that it can be. And even when they were hiring a new lab director, someone from our office who now heads our forensics unit was intricately involved there, and they still work daily with the lab. There were problems with robbery cases, and we made some recommendations to shore up and improve those investigations. Those robbery cases have gotten better. So, yes, I think that the rank and file are working very well together. And the problems recently have been between the commissioner and myself. And I don't know what brought on the change. I know it occurred with this change in administration.
But I had another question about the war room, and then, Aaron, I'm going to get you on. You're the next caller up, and encourage folks to join us here at 410-319-8888, Aaron and Bob being the next two callers. But with all due respect, over the 17 years that I've been doing this show, as long as you've been state's attorney, I'm not putting this all on your doorstep, but I'm saying for as long as you've been state's attorney, there has been seemingly an adversarial relationship between you and the police department, and your office through every commissioner, not just this commissioner.
I could tell you when it began. It began when Kurt Schmoke was mayor and Frazier was the police commissioner, and he came up with the recommendation to do rotation. And I spoke to him about it, and I also spoke to Mayor Schmoke. They went ahead with rotating homicide detectives. I received a call from a reporter who asked me what I thought about it, and I said it would decimate the department. At that point, the Baltimore Sun came out with an article, said the state's attorney is at loggerheads with the police department. That has continued unabated every single time. Now, I will speak out. When they were arresting all these people in the community with zero tolerance, I talked about that.
Well, see, but two things, though. Let me just ask this question. I do want to get back to our listeners here. I want to get to this war room question, which I think is important. But this adversarial relationship that exists between the police and state's attorney, I think, is very real. On the level of functionality in terms of what happens in a courtroom, I think it affects what happens in the courtroom. It affects prosecutions, A. And B, in this race for attorney general, it has become, and I'm just going to lay it on the table here from my perspective, it has become the elephant in the room. It has become the issue of race in the room. Because for lots of good reasons, a lot of people in the African-American community do not trust the police. And so people see Mr. Bernstein as defending that and see you as standing up to the police. I think that's part of – but it's all tinged with the race that's going on in this camp. Race in this race.
Yeah, well, none of this is of my making.
No, I'm not saying it's of your making. But so what of my original question between you and the police?
Mm-hmm.
What is of your making? You think none of this is of your making?
I think that if you want a state's attorney who – does not speak the truth and who covers up for issues and problems with the police department, you don't have that in me. So if you want a rubber stamp for the police, you don't have that in me. Now, so if a state's attorney makes a public statement that is not always on the same page as the police commissioner, the media then makes it a big deal. There is always going to be some tension between the police and the prosecutors. Police make arrests based on probable cause. And once that clearance is done, that's the case for them. Now, trying to get police, and there are a lot of them who really and truly want to follow that to a conviction. And there are some who, few, who don't care. No. They've done their job, and now it's time for us to do ours.
What about, well, I have a question about that and what Mr. Bernstein has accused you of, but let me come back to the question about the war room. I'm curious, because this war room thing has become an issue from the Able Report on, and we've done a lot of shows around this issue. And we had Paige Corder for a while on our website blogging, and that was caused enough consternation. She has her own website now.
well, but, say no more.
but she did raise some important issues, and I think that the question is, though, about the war room.
Yes.
Is, and you've never answered this question. What is the conviction rate of those the war room has identified as the most dangerous criminals in our community, whether that number is 600 or 1,000.
We don't follow that.
Well, why not? How can you not follow it, a state's attorney?
Because let me explain how it works. I don't do conviction rates because I think conviction rates are smoke and mirrors.
But we're talking about the most dangerous people in this community.
Let me finish. Conviction rates are smoke and mirrors. You can have a 98% conviction rate. If nobody's going to prison, what does it matter? When it comes to violent offenders, what does it matter? So what numbers we get are numbers of individuals who are serving time in prison for having committed violent crimes. Those are actual numbers. They're not mine. They're the Department of Corrections. So I'm not dealing with smoke and mirrors.
Well, not smoke and mirrors, but if you have, let's say for argument's sake, for argument's sake, they say there are 600 people. Let's say for argument's sake, there's 600 people.
Yeah.
There are 600 people that the war room says these are the baddest men and women in Baltimore, causing violence, rape, robbery, murder, dealing drugs, shooting people. We got to get them off the street. How many of those have you gotten off the street is the question.
Thousands.
Of the number that you've identified.
Thousands. What happens is they come through the war room and are identified in many different ways. And they could be arrested for open container. So you could have a violent repeat offender who comes into the war room and has been identified as a war room offender, not for his current charge, but for his record. So he's been arrested for some minor offense, open container, whatever the misdemeanor.
Smoking a blunt, whatever it might be.
Yeah, yeah. So you have a lot of those, but they are identified as violent repeat offenders and have gotten caught up in a misdemeanor arrest thing. So now you're not going to get any time, but except for time served for the most part for them. Because you don't decline to prosecute their cases because they have been identified as violent repeat offenders. So they may end up spending more time in jail, but you're not going to get them sent to prison. Now, that may end up being a way that you could violate them in their probation. But again, that is a court matter. So we try to go to court to argue to a judge, and he may consider this minor thing to be a technical violation, whereas we see it as a signal that they're doing things in the community that they promised not to do. So it's a little tough to devise a conviction rate when they're being arrested, not just on violent crime, but on every kind of crime. And that's what happens. It is triggered when they are brought to central booking.
Let me reopen the phones here, 410-319-8888. We'll go to Aaron, and then we're going to go to Michael, because I think he has a critique of me in this. Let's see what he has to say. But, Aaron, you're on the air first, as I said you could come on.
Well, good evening, Madam State's Attorney Anthony, and how are you all?
Hi, well, hello. Welcome. How are you?
Aaron, good to hear from you.
You know, I'm going to have to bring up the elephant in the room, which is race in this deal.
Your phone call is breaking up. I don't know if it's us or you. Try that again. Say again. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I heard you say elephant in the room is race, and nobody's bringing it up. But
I want to ask just me two things in that regard. One, do you believe your opponent is playing to racial fears with the Pitcairn case and the commercial with the...
Yes.
And, you know, and is that a concern that if he were to be state's attorney, that the African-American community should have some concern about? And what is your response to that?
I think anyone who appeals to those negative and basic human frailties in us, such as racism, sexism, and all those other things, people who appeal to that, those negativities, are not people that we need in public office.
Ms. Jessamy, about the commercial that Aaron just made reference to, it was a former assistant state's attorney who essentially...
No,
she
was never an assistant state's attorney. This woman,
she was identified in the press as a...
Yeah, but that is not accurate.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't even think she's a lawyer. She's not a lawyer. This is a person who had been hired to run this program. Mm. And I can tell you that no witness or victim who enrolls in our program since it started in 1994 has been harmed or killed since that program started. We have witness assistance coordinators on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Now, my opponent says we put people up in motels, dingy motels. Well, we do some of that, but we have safe houses located in Baltimore County, Carroll County, Howard County, Harford County, Cecil County, Anne Arundel County.
But, Ms. Jessamy, no disrespect.
We also have houses located in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Florida, California, North Carolina.
But no disrespect. But the underlying message of that commercial was that your office dropped the ball in protecting the Dawsons.
And that is not accurate.
Okay.
That is not accurate. That is totally inaccurate. And, again, it's exploiting a tragedy.
Why is it exploiting a tragedy? It was a tough political ad. You may not agree with it.
Well, it's not true. We did not drop the ball there.
You did drop the ball.
So I'm saying the ad is inaccurate.
But that's politics.
It may be. But it's my right to say it's not true.
Yes, absolutely. That's why you're here.
And that's right. That's what I'm saying. The ad is inaccurate. It is not truthful.
Let's go back to the phones. 410-319-8888. Michael in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yeah, my comment was for Mark. Good evening to the whole panel, but to Mark especially. And it seemed to me I detect a tinge of arrogance when you're speaking to Ms. Jessamy, the kind that I did not hear last week when you had Mr. Bernstein on, and I didn't hear when you had the police commissioner on there. I mean, you even allowed the police commissioner to hang up on callers.
And whoa. Nobody hung up on anybody. He doesn't control the phones.
The commissioner was allowed to silence a call and told the caller that I will not allow you to say that. He did do that.
No, that did not happen. That did not. He may have answered the caller, but he didn't have it. He couldn't silence a caller or anybody else on the phone.
Well, you must have did it then, but that caller went.
So what's your point, Michael?
Police commissioner, I just think that if you're going to hold this interview, it needs to be fair.
Okay, well,
that's my point to you. I hear you.
Okay,
I
appreciate what you have to say, Michael. I don't think I'm being any less direct with State's Attorney Jessamy than I was with Challenger Bernstein or I was with Bielfeld. when we talked about racist police and pushing on those issues and police not respecting the African-American community and why black folks in this town don't trust you and the police. If that wasn't pushing direct questions, I don't know what was. We've had laughter and hard questions in all three interviews.
And Miss Jessamy's tough. She can handle anything we throw
at her. I'm tough and smart. I am tough and smart.
And I'm not. And besides, you know, win or lose, I'm looking for some turducken. 410-319-8888. Warren, you're on the air.
Yes, listen, I'm on my way back from dropping my daughter off in Boston, so I really can't hear you all other than right now that you have me on. But I've been getting snippets from folks down there. One of the questions I have is this. You know, that the grand jury indicted Wagner, I understand, on the murder of Pitcairn, and that comes prior to his preliminary hearing. My question is, why couldn't he have been indicted prior to his preliminary hearing on the robbery charge? That would have kept him in jail. He would not have been on the street at the time Pitcairn was murdered, especially considering that John Wagner was a war room candidate. It would have been very easy to indict him prior to the preliminary hearing, where Pat knows that he
I have an answer for you.
Well, okay.
If you stop talking, I'll give it to you. He was summoned to the preliminary hearing to get a statement from him, to get him under oath, because he had indicated that he was not interested in cooperating. And in instances where witnesses do not want to cooperate, we need a recorded statement. And because there had been no recorded statement, he was summoned to preliminary hearing. A statement under oath. We normally do not have witnesses come to preliminary hearings except in these kinds of instances so that we can get them under oath so that when we do get a criminal information and file it at the circuit court level, if he fails to come, we can use his prior statement against him. That's why he was summoned to come to court, so that we could get a recorded statement from him.
410-319-8888, and I don't have a follow-up. I don't know enough personally about the case. I haven't followed it as a lawyer since I'm not one. And Casey, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Miss Jessamy? It's Casey from Darker Than Blue.
Hey, how you doing, Casey?
I'm doing well. I'm following you around. How you doing, Mark? I haven't talked to you in a while either.
I'm well.
Hey, good, good. Well, you know what? I just want everyone to know that I think this is just a multifold thing, that it's not just the state's attorney's office that needs to be held accountable for the things that are going on here. When I think about, you know, I'm a committed person on trying to keep our community safe. I'm over here at Darker Than Blue at the Waverly, in the Waverly area, and we've had two murders in the past year. You know, I do support the police department in saying that they did do a wonderful job in bringing these people to justice. And just in Charles Village, we had another murder just a few weeks back. But in the same respect, these people were prosecuted. You know, it's just something's going on with the court system that's in allowing these people. It's oddly enough, the criminals, they go through this, so the criminals are educated to this. You know, so, you know, my hat's off to the state's attorney's office because, you know, it just seems like at times most of these criminals should have been lawyers. But, you know, when looking at it, it's not just the state's attorney. We need to hold, and I believe, you know, I love Miss Jessamy. I think we need to hold her office accountable, but I think she's still doing a wonderful job in maintaining and cleaning up what needs to be done.
Thanks, Casey.
Thanks, Casey.
We only have a minute left here, and I wish that I could go on with some more questions. If we could have more time before the election, we welcome either or both candidates back. We try to get the ball in a debate, but we're having a hard time doing that. But State's Attorney Pat Jessamy, thank you so much for being in the studio with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you. And we will take a short break here and come back. And when we return, we will take a look at the divide in this country and what it means. I'll remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back.